time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It's Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 17th, 2022. So good to have you here. I want to honor Martin Luther King and what he did in the civil rights movement. He did his best to right so many wrongs. And we sometimes look over the headlines and go like, gee, did we accomplish that? And it's something that every generation has to step up and do. So for those that are continuing the cause, Martin Luther King Day, it's a good day to remind ourselves, what can we do to honor him and all that he did? His I Have a Dream speech is one of the most studied, amazing speeches. And one of the guys that I pay attention to, an author and speaker, is Simon Sinek. And he talked about this speech. And he didn't say, I have a plan. He didn't talk about other ways he could frame it up. He said, I have a dream. And I think that's so important in each of our lives when we're looking at is what is our dreams? If you don't have a dream, I would suggest you're not living to your fullest. You got to have a dream. I had a dream that we could provide an audio format where we can bring mortgage bankers information in listening only mode. I learn best when I'm listening. That's why we created this podcast. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. We got on our hot topic. Special guest is Whitney Nelson. She is the founder and CEO of Brilliant People. I like being around brilliant people. That's why Alice and Jack and Alan and Matt and everyone else on the podcast, I love being around brilliant people. And I love that the name of her company. And on this program, we're going to be discussing the root cause of people problems. We have people problems? Yeah, I tell you, it's the number one reoccurring thing that we all got to deal with. And it is one of the most complex aspects of every organization. So we're going to be talking about that and talking about connection and community in the workplace and how important we achieve it and how important it is and what are some tools, some tips. So it's one of my favorite topics. I love looking at personality tests. I'm looking at different communication styles, learning styles, love languages, also known as the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. I love all of that. Today, we're focusing on aspects of people problems, and I'm really looking forward to that. Time to give a special thank you to our sponsors and partners. We're partnered with IndustrySyndicate.com. Love what they do. Check out all the podcasts at IndustrySyndicate.com. They do a good job promoting out podcasts. Also, check out Josh Fitz over there, what he does. I love Josh, and we're going to be doing some things together. Anyway, special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We also have an Astros FusionBot Solutions product, experiencing the power of fully integrated solution. And I like this part, in an open architecture. Check out what Karen Jenkins talked about in her October 4th interview with us. It's really interesting. I think that closed technology, closed architecture is not a good thing. They have made a conscious decision. Maybe that's what's promoted them or made them become the number one fintech company in the world. Seriously, that's what they are. They're number one fintech solution company in the world. And they have many solutions across banking platforms, many aspects of it. One of them is their mortgage bot solution. So check them out. Also, Lenders One, as well as Mortgage Collaborative, both of these are co-ops. What do I mean by co-op? It's where we get together into smaller groups and connect with our peers. So important as we're looking at our organization. Are you talking to others about what you're going through? It is so meaningful to have a membership in both of these organizations. Now, it does not replace the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Don't replace that. But what it does do is it brings you together in a smaller, more intimate way, which you communicate and connect with other lenders and, of course, vendors. Also, Incelerate. Josh Friend does a great job over at Incelerate. Helps lenders close more loans by engaging better with borrowers, prospects, and past customers. Check it out. We also had Josh on and June 21st, 2021. Still a great podcast. Go listen to that. Then I would like to say, check out Knowledge Coop. It's a great learning management system. Ken Perry does a great job of that product. And also Mobility, MMI, and Modex are both sponsors. Grateful for our partnership with them. Also SnapDocs. They have an eVault solution that will make it so simple to get started with eNotes. And it's so easy to transact across many partners. And in doing so, it'll make the loans close more quickly. And as we deal more and more with all the various phases and variations and mutations of COVID, I tell you, everything mortgage is so important. Then also we have Success Kit. Check out the podcast that we did last week with Julian Lumpkin. So January 10th, check it out. And what thing you can do to have your customer testimonies shared on your podcast or just in your emails. We're working with him so closely and wow, so powerful. Also, Lender's Toolkit. We're so pleased to have Brent and Brett at Lender's Toolkit as a partner. Also, a final thank you goes out to Rob, Les, Alice, Alan, Matt, and Jack for their contributions. Anyway, let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
This is Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, acting FHFA Director Sandra Thompson appeared before the Senate Banking Committee in consideration of her appointment to a full five-year term. Thompson testified that the end state of the GSEs is something that Congress would have to legislate. She also said her focus will be on the safety and soundness mission Congress gave to FHFA, along with ensuring that the GSEs are providing liquidity across the nation and especially supporting underserved markets. MBA supports Thompson's nomination to be FHFA director. The Senate Banking Committee must vote on her nomination before a vote by the full Senate can occur. And before I go, I want to remind you about MBA's Servicing Solutions Conference happening February 21st through the 24th in Orlando, Florida. To register, go to mba.org/conferences. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate you getting that recording off to us and sharing that with us. Good stuff. If you want to stay up on what's going on with the MBA, download the Mortgage Action Alliance app. It's really effective at helping you hear what's going on, what they're lobbying for within D.C. and within the Beltway, and give you updates. So, and you can actually have your voice heard as a result of that. So sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app in the App Store, also known as MAA, M-A-A, the MAA app. So get it. Download it. Let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
A whole new world. A new fair market point of view. No one to tell the bears no or where to go or say they're only dreaming. The bulk of inflation pressure comes from the delays in importing, producing, and manufacturing goods compounded by labor constraints. When the costs of services accelerate, that will eliminate the hope for a rapid decline in inflation. Now what? A generation that seldom saw half-point moves in price must face constant underwater locks and regular moves outside a half-point. Expect a volatile ride to the new world. Let me share this whole bear world with you. These views are my own. See a new world at tmspotlight.com.
Yes, be sure to sign up for that newsletter. Check it out. You can put in power, and there's the code, to get a free subscription to the paid version. That's a great job on that. Gary Kencherbone and he team up each week. I love that. That was actually a good song and a good way to get into the markets today. Matt Graham is taking the day off because it is what? It's Martin Luther King Day again. Woohoo! Way to go, Matt. Some companies are closed, so Matt is not here with us because the markets are closed. Wish you, Matt, well, and have a great day. Look forward to having you back. I love the service, by the way, what mbslive.net provides you. You can sign up for it for an extended trial period and do so by going to the website, mbslive.net. And when you go to the sign-up page, put in the code LOL, and you get an extended period without credit card required. That's always nice. Alice Alvey is here, and she's here on her day off. Union Home is celebrating their day off. Alice is CMB Vice President of Education and Training. Lots of training, lots and lots of training. A lot of education these days at Union Home Mortgage. And she's got the legislative update, and so a lot of things to talk about. Alice, so good to have you here.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here. And we just got a foot of snow last night. So even though I had the day off, I thought, oh, well, there's not much to do except break out the shovel on that outer edge of that storm Izzy that's been hitting the East Coast. So I know a lot of you, a lot of us have felt the pain of this weather front from snow and lots of rain. So it's a crazy weather pattern.
That is, that's Andy's job to go break out the shovel. You don't do that stuff.
Well, sometimes it's fun to just get outside and shovel a little. But I know those of you down south are going, what is she, nuts? Okay.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, two things I wanted to touch on today. First of all, I'd like to start with Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
I'd like to call it, it's a day on, not a day off. So even though the markets are closed, there are a lot of events out there. I was just checking around. I know a lot of events are closed because of the COVID, but there's still a lot of virtual things going on. And so that means that even if something is going on in the city of Detroit, they have a whole list of events going on that are going to be virtual and great speakers. And check the calendar. I think if you have kids at home, you're making sure that they get a chance to pay attention to how important today is and how diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging are so important and what those things mean. And we can help this next generation be really good at those things. So check it out. Yeah. There's lots of stuff online to find. If your event's been postponed, like I know one of the concerts is postponed until June. Well, we'll celebrate then also. So, but I like that phrase. It's a day on, to be on with the mission of really a day that, as Bill calls it, he says, this day embodies the American spirit. And so that's how he inspired us to be on instead of off today.
That's very good. That's Bill Cosgrove, the Bill that is the founder of Union Home. That's good.
So then the second thing was making sure we touched on the Supreme Court striking down the mandate for companies with 100 people or more, not so for the hospital and medical community, but for us as mortgage bankers, we're back to what our CEOs feel is best to keep everybody safe. So Dave, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's really interesting how many people have already made the transition to a virtual work staff. I mean, sending most of your people out, I mean, except for the essentials like the shipping department, there's some aspects of the company you got to have everyone still there. But I think more and more, as I'm talking to more and more clients, it's like, we weren't sure how they're going to rule. So knowing that virtual staff are not subject to that regulation, if that were to in fact be the case, thankfully it's not. So they went that virtual world. But I'm of the opinion that it is something we just got to get used to. That's what's come out of COVID, everybody. Alice, how much of your company in the normal times when we're getting back to normal, if there is something normal anymore, what are you seeing for your company as far as the number of people that are working remote? Any percentages?
Yeah, so right now we are almost 100% remote except for those types of job roles that do need to be in the office, as you said, funding, certain aspects of finance and accounting and post-closing. But at the same time, it's up to the partner. There are some positions that are on site. And so most partners have said, let's work from home. We've gotten very good at it. Our training was already set virtually because we're a national company. We were already accommodating everything remote. So, and we were all already on laptops. So for us to go remote was very straightforward. We have, though, now that it's gone on so long, we started last year, actually, with a lot of training on leadership. It's a whole different ballgame managing remote. And I will say that this generation coming out of college right now, the Gen Zers, they want remote. They want blended learning. And you're not going to fight it. And if you think you're going to get everybody in the office after all this, it's not happening. That generation is forcing that change. So we are going to be doing a lot more blended and remote working permanently going forward.
Yep. I think that is the standard by which we'll be operating. Absolutely. And which is requiring some adjustments. And some companies are bringing people in with some on a rotating basis where they bring them in. So there's still a sense of community. I love what something was said at the annual conference by Malcolm Gladwell. He said, one of the casualties of the work remote is the lack of ability to pick up subliminally by observation what is a top person that's performing really well. He watched Bob Woodward work at his desk. They all work in the sea of cubes of what so many of the journalists. And you put a junior next to a guy like Bob Woodward. He happened to be one of the junior guys back in his earliest days and watched Bob Woodward. He says that guy outworked everybody. There was no wonder why he was so successful. And I think that's one of the casualties. And I think that comes back to you, Alice, is is how are you guys addressing that success by observation?
It is a very big gap that we recognize right away. And so we have various ways of doing that. We have several mentoring programs. We actually have a customized mentor program for individuals who are new to the workforce. It's their first job, for example, in an office. Quote office, right? You're working in your office from home. So we do set up mentoring for them so that they can start to learn those things. We have expanded shadowing so that people can learn those things. And then we have different community groups to be able to expand the specific skill sets that we know people will now need to, will have to be very deliberate in offering those opportunities that have, exactly as you said, it won't just happen naturally by them observing what's going on around them. It is something you have to address as a company, very forward thinking to solve.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that got to be giving a lot of consideration. I want to spend just a moment on the working remote part, Alice. I have the privilege of coaching so many outstanding executives. One of the things I do more of now these days than anything else. And one of the people I'm having the honor to coach, and it's me that at the deepest sense of the word, is Chris Ringrose of Summit Funding out in Sacramento. She says, our policy is the employee has to meet certain performance standards in order for them and their supervisor to work remote. What it is, they're focusing on a performance. And if there's a failure in the performance, not only does the employee have to go back to the office, but the supervisor does too. So doesn't that really motivate a supervisor to make sure this is working so they don't get drugged back in the office because of a failure of one person? So I think it's really interesting thinking that through. There's different ways. I got to get more specifics on it, but I thought that was a real interesting approach. And interesting, not in a negative sense. I mean, a cool way to approach it. I think we have to be monitoring performance because, and then there has to be certain standards. Kids aren't there distracting and taking away from performance. Alice, any thoughts as you wrap up your segment on what we've said?
I agree with that logic that it is a joint responsibility, and especially individuals who are new to working from home, they may not have that self-discipline. As you said, they may need some help in getting their home environment set up where it's possible. And in some cases, it's just not possible through no fault of their own. They have a small home with lots of people and lots of activity. Right. It can be really difficult for even the best partner to work from home. So I agree. I think it's a great philosophy to hold them jointly responsible for the success.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I like that. I like that approach. I think it's a lot of thought is going to go into that. We had someone talk about one particular company set up a series of videos. These are the requirements to be able to work from home. Here's the requirements. You have to have a room that you can go into. They have quietness, that there's boundaries for kids. How do you handle this? I mean, lots of coaching around that rather than the legalistic approach. So good stuff. Alice, thanks so much for being here.
I would just be careful on that last comment that you made. We have to be fair. Not everybody has the financial surrounding
to
meet some of those requirements. And so we're very cognizant to make sure our assessments of that are fair and equitable based on what's
really
available for that partner. Yeah,
that is really, really, really good. I'd love to get everyone's thought. Listeners, you got anything? Send it on over. Alice, thanks for showing up on your day on, as Bill would say, and being here with us. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Alan Pollack with the tech update. Alan?
Last week I talked about the CES show, and you know how the phones now work. You say something and then they track you. So after I made that comment, the phone was listening and all these weird tech things from the CES show popped up on my phone. So I held on to two of them because I know you're going to like these. The first one that at the CES show, and you can buy this now, it's $200. It's the Bird Buddy Feeder, and it's like a Ring doorbell. It tracks birds, it takes pictures, and it notifies you on your phone, and you can watch birds feeding from your bird feeder live. So for the bird enthusiastic person, you can get the Bird Buddy Feeder. But this one's better, David, right? We talked about the cows many months ago. So this one's called the Lutu Litter Box, and it tracks your cat's bathroom trips. Now you can buy this today. I don't know the price. You can just Google the Lutu litter box, and it looks for irregularities and potential illnesses based on a database and the tracking methodology, type of cat and the weight and all those wonderful things. So if you were worried about that, there's now a system for it. So get on to the mortgage stuff, right? Quick conversation about MLK. I think it's important to note that our industry has done a really, really good job at making sure that technology is non-biased and that it leverages the same type of rules and information and data regardless of race, color, kind, you name it. Unfortunately, there's so much more for our industry to do, right? There's the expansion of credit, there's financial literacy, there's so much more, talking about all types of races and types of people. So we've obviously made good strides, but there's always more to do. So just in the heart of MLK Day, I thought that would be important to mention today. The more digital we get, the less racist we get. So let's talk about cool stuff. The first one, this is really cool. This is close to home. Sydney AI, it's a digital messaging platform. Now, it's an AI messaging platform. It allows consumers to engage with different digital channels 24/7, 365. It's for a bank in Ireland. And what's really cool about this is it comes out of Australia, the same technology that our friends at FaceMe, if you remember, Unique came out of. It seems to be a hot spot for chatbot technology. Anyways, customers can engage with mortgage, with bank accounts, with all those different things. So for the financial institutions on the phone here, if you're looking at doing a chatbot, it's not just about the mortgage lending. It's about the total customer experience. It's about answering questions 24/7, 365. How do I find out about the status of a mortgage? How do I apply? Where do I find rates? Where are you located, right? How do I deposit a check? All of those things can be answered 24/7, 365. And then that chatbot extends itself into your mortgage lending process as you continue to mature it. So that's why it's super interesting. There's so much more in chatbots that our industry has not even uncovered yet. But it's really interesting I mentioned that because, get this, it's called Observations from the FinTech Snark Tank. That's S-N-A-R-K. And it says banks and credit union executives are holding a loaded gun pointed at their feet. The name of the gun is called digital transformation. Banks are deluded into believing they're digitally transforming their organizations when all they're doing is deploying new tools for yesterday's industry. And it continues to say, not surprisingly, banks who think they're only 10% or less through their digital transformation strategy have little to show for it so far and are much further away than they think.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, it talks about financial institutions, but the reality is that everybody is affected by that because we have the old way of doing business, which is yesterday, and we have the new way, which is today, and we continue to buy all these tools. And by the way, a lot of these tools are great friends of mine. We have fantastic tools in this industry, fantastic innovation, but it's bringing them all together and creating that cohesive workflow-oriented ecosystem, then implementing chatbots, then doing all this other stuff. So we're much further away than we think we are. We got more work to do. David, there's also something I want to mention. It was delayed by the CFPB. I don't have the details on it. I just remembered about it. I read it earlier this week. But there was a ruling to hold off, but it was meant to allow consumers to dictate and have ownership over their data that banks and technology lenders store. And so they pushed that off. There's more to come on that as we learn more. So get this, David. I know you're sitting on billions and billions of crypto. I know you're watching the market. By the minute as we're saying it, crypto markets could be changing. Well, now, if you go to Silicon Valley, there is a two-bath, two-bedroom home that has been listed for sale in crypto cash or loan. And what's really unique about it is that you have to liquidate it up front. But some of these people do want to buy in crypto. They've got tons and tons of crypto. I know other people myself that have bought in crypto. Unofficially, they've transferred the cash into US dollars, but this gentleman is accepting it in crypto. So I think there's going to be a lot more to come throughout the year. But yeah, Silicon Valley, you can now buy a house in crypto.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the vendor we all use. It is the Equifax Work Number. And what's really cool is they are now saying that all employers within 60 months can now pull the prior 5 years of employment. So you used to only be able to pull a certain amount. Now you can go 5 years back and get all of the data that's available, not just specific data. So fantastic that it's being expanded. Lots of people do that and need it, especially for repeat business and all other types of needs. So that's really good. And then, David, the other thing I mentioned to the audience, I promise I would talk more about what happens in the event of a data breach and what happens. We talked quickly about the first 24 hours. We talked about stopping the data loss, isolating where it occurred. If you have to shut a system down, do so. Mm-hmm. Some of that may apply to the vendor side. But when you're the lender, what do you do? Right. And so the first thing you need to do is before that data breach, you need to make sure that you have the right type of staff and you have the right type of people that understand how to do this. And you have folks that you need to contact. You have to look at the local and state regulations and federal based on each state is different sometimes based on the type of data that was exposed and how much of that data. And then in addition, you have to consider your systems and how many people were affected and how exponentially larger it can get. All of those things are usually handled internally by a chief security officer, not even just anymore as your CIO, that's your CISO. And you need to think immediately about a communication plan. You need to think about who you have to contact. Sometimes you have to contact a legal company, an insurance company. And then the second thing that you sometimes have to contact is a forensic auditor. That forensic auditor you need on the phone, usually with legal, at the exact same time with your vendor, because there are specific entities of data that you need to collect, because certain pieces of data aren't just cut and dry as what you see. Some data tells the story around what data is there. And so that forensic auditor is somebody that understands the data. They deal with this situation every day. That's somebody that you need to employ immediately. And most insurance carriers will require that you hire somebody like that. There's a lot that goes into this topic. We probably could talk more about it. We did mention that we'll look to bring somebody on to talk more about it. But those are the folks that you need to have. And as a vendor, that communication plan to talk to your clients, making sure that you let them know that it's happened, what you're looking at, and you keep a record of everything, the data, the internal emails, the files, all of that is important. You will get over that data breach. It does cost a lot of money, but it could be a lot worse. You have to look at it as the glass half full and prevent it from ever happening again.
Great point. Good stuff, Alan. Appreciate it very much. Thinking about the cryptocurrency, think back about something Alice talked about. I don't know, it was a month or two ago, Alice. You talked about cryptocurrency and some of the challenges that go with that as it relates to knowing that this is an asset that can go up and down in value rather rapidly if you close on
That's right.
And there's some real dynamics about the cryptocurrency markets, and especially when you look at the volatility. We're certainly seeing the volatility right now, so put that out there. I love the idea of chat box. You and I talked about this forever. I get so annoyed. If you're going to use a chat bot, have it be regionally intelligent. I was on a website of a major company, and their chat bot came up and was asking one question. I mean, it's just like you want to slap that thing into next week. It was so annoying. Jack, you want to jump in on this?
Going back to the markets, obviously the domestic markets shut down today, but global equity markets, you know, generally were on the rise today. I just want to remind everybody, Les Parker and Matt Graham have spent countless amount of time telling us about volatility. We're in a very volatile environment right now. As the 10-year marched up over 180 and has now rallied back to 177 change on the close. And this is going to be a week of real estate releases. We've got the National Home Builders Index on Tuesday, building permits and housing starts on Wednesday, and then jobless claims and existing home sales on Thursday. And one thing that I've been following along with Matt and Les is central banks across the globe. The Central Bank of China lowered rates today. So taking kind of a contrarian position to a lot of Euro central banks, China went the other direction. A couple of reasons for that, the impact of Omicron variant on their economy, and this ever looming serious concern they have with Evergrande, the realty development company over there, defaulting on debt. I just keep an eye on that. That's a game changer, although the Chinese government will probably do anything and everything to keep that propped up, because they're looking at something that will rival 07, 08, 09 here domestically. They're looking at a similar situation in property valuation over in China. And it just, as in our country, it has tentacles that will impact so many segments in China. And then, David, just kind of turning real quickly, you mentioned community. I'll be very interested in what our special guest today has to say about, you know, how do you create and grow and enhance community in a remote workplace? And how do you build that and grow that when the employees are dispersed? So I'll be real interested in what our special guest has to say about community in a remote work environment.
Thanks, yeah. Jack. Appreciate it. Good commentary on the market. I meant to go to you earlier in Matt's absence, but glad you got that in. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Folks, that wraps up the weekly update of what's going on in the mortgage industry. Now we're going to head into the hot topic segment. So here's the transition. Welcome, everybody, to the Lickin' and Lendy podcast. It is the hot topic segment, and we have as our special guest, Whitney Nelson. She is the founder of and CEO of Brilliant People. And we're going to be talking about root causes of people problems within an organization, as well as explaining why connection and community. And we're going to talk about that in the workplace and how important it is to achieve it. And what are some of the ways to do so? I'm really excited to have Whitney. She's a new friend. We're going to be starting to work together. She's going to be working in and through part of our organization, our consulting firm, Transformational Mortgage Solutions, because I think one of the biggest things we fail to transform while we're transforming technology, transforming processes, are we really transforming people? So let's get Whitney Nelson on. Whitney, good to have you joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Nice. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I love the name of your company, Brilliant People. I could not name my company that. It's, I would have to say Surrounded by Brilliant People Company. That's what I do. And I love your passion. It's one of my passions. And I think if you sit and look at the value of any company, goes out the doors at the end of work every day. And so we got to figure out a way to do this better. And I'm excited to have you share with us your thoughts. So, but before we go there, let's get a chance that our listeners get to know you a little bit.
Well, I'm from Austin. I was actually born and raised here. I know that's not a very common thing these days, but I've been here for a long time. And so many people moving in. I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, I've been here for a long time. And it's been really amazing and just nuts to see the growth.
So we went to dinner the other night, and just, Alice, it's like you and I going to dinner. It's so much fun, and we have such great conversation, and we had the intent about talking about the podcast and what she's doing. And then I found out also what Whitney is passionate about, and it's really a special topic, and I want to get into that at some point in time down the road. But you're a delightful human being who's trying to make a difference in the world in so many areas. But let's start with what we could do in the workplace. So the first question is, what is the root cause for people problems within an organization? What are you seeing?
Well, we like to sum that up by saying people differences trigger people problems.
People differences. Aha. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. It's a pretty simple statement, but when you think about it, it really does come down to that. In a lot of situations, a lot of the problems that we're seeing, that's the bottom line, is that there's some way someone's showing up, some way that they're talking to others. That's the problem, is the other side's not understanding it.
That's such a true, and there's many factors that go into that. Let's get over to Jack. You were talking, Jack, about connection and community. Well, so we'll let you go there with that.
Well, David and Whitney, the root cause of people problems in organization. I've always felt that the organization expects commitment from their people, but very seldom do they return that commitment. Do they make a commitment to the people, right? Educate me, help me grow. No, the company just wants you to do your job. So I look at people and the organization, it's got to be a two-way street, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And I think that that's one of the problems that I think happens a lot. We've all heard this, that we've got issues with managers, people that are being moved up into a management position because they were an amazing individual contributor. And so they move them up into having the ability to manage other people, but they've never managed anybody else necessarily successfully. They've managed themselves. And so to your point, the organizations that are doing that, it's almost like they're setting them up for failure. Instead of supporting them through the process and making sure that they've been developed to a place where they can get up into that position and then successfully lead not only themselves, but also a team.
Leading a team, all the various things that go into that. And there's no one better to talk about that and then Alice, who does a lot of training on all of that topic. So Alice, going to you.
Yes, I agree with you, Whitney. We offer a mandatory team leadership training for that exact reason. We have team leadership community. We have future leaders. We have multiple leadership community trainings because we recognize that need, that not everyone's cut out for that. So I have a question for you. That's a whole lot of different personalities. Is there one personality in the workplace that you find is better than another for this kind of growth?
No. Personally, I really believe that we need them all. If I use myself as an example, I've got a pretty strong, very strong personality. I can come across very passionate about whatever it is I'm passionate about. And I might completely blow somebody out of the water who is a more reserved person or someone who maybe needs to process a little longer when we're sitting in a meeting and I'm throwing out ideas. And so to me, I feel like when we can help people understand who you are in the mix, who other people are personality-wise, and how people perceive us, then we start to understand what our strengths are and what our challenges are, and then we can figure out where the gaps are, and then we really start to be able to dig into how you might be able to fill a gap in an area that I don't have the knack for. So for me, I really don't feel like there's one type of personality that's the best in every situation. I think that we really need them all.
Well, multiple personality types. I mean, there's the various, like there's the sanguine, there's the phlegmatic, there's the choleric, and there's the melancholic. We talked about this at dinner briefly because it's one of my passions is to learn how we communicate with each other and the various differences of how we're wired. So a sanguine, which I am, and I thought you were for sure when I first met you because you're so outgoing, but I think that when we look at the personality types, it's really, really important. Jack wants to go back to the question number two. Let's go there real quickly. Jack, go ahead and jump on that.
Well, Whitney, we talked about working from home, and I posed a question about creating the culture of community and the challenges that a remote workforce gives to that effort to create the community that we all want to. I mean, how do you see that? And then contrast that to creating community when everybody is in the workplace. Are the two going to be different approaches to achieve the level of community that we want?
I mean, it's such a hard question right now, just with the way that work is going and the remote work and hybrid structures. But I really think that, I mean, yes, it's harder to connect with somebody through a Zoom conference versus being in person with them. But that's what we've got to work with right now. And so I think that I loved the conversation earlier about having the mentor programs for new employees and just onboarding people into the mix. And personally speaking, I think that that's such a great opportunity for anyone, whether they're a brand new employee, never been in the workforce, or just a new employee to the organization, is creating mentor programs with someone who's been there for a lot longer that can kind of show them the ropes. I also think that there's this idea, and there's been a lot of research behind the importance of a sense of belonging. And speaking of it being Martin Luther King Day, and we were talking earlier about Simon Sinek's thoughts on I Have a Dream. And he talked about how as human beings, we are tribal animals. And one of the things that ensures success of the tribe is that sense of belonging. And so there's been a lot of research done around that and how when there is a sense of belonging, it's like 56% increase in jobs performance, 75% decrease in employee sick days, which is huge. And so for me, it is harder to create that sense of belonging when you're remote, but I think it can still be done. And it could be little things. It could be things that have to do with making sure everybody has a voice. If decisions are being made and it's a decision where you can allow people to weigh in, you'll get their buy-in, even if it's not the decision they would have made because they had a voice in that discussion.
Yeah, right? There's importance of having people feel heard, listened to. Coming back, and it's called attunement. It's tuning in to what someone's saying, which oftentimes requires us to repeat back to them, what I thought I heard you say, Whitney, is this. Am I correct? That just goes another step, and I wonder how many of us really do that and do that well, and it does create connection and improves community.
I totally agree. And when you think about how we've gone so digital, and we need to on a lot of levels, but there's so many surveys that companies are sending out to their people now, and they're all digital. So they're kind of putting their thoughts in the mix. But when you can do a one-on-one with someone, and yes, it takes extra time to do that, but when you can actually have a human-to-human conversation around the answers they're giving in those surveys, I think that goes a long way as well.
That's a good point. And getting back to the four personality types or the various types of personalities, I think that's just such an important part of learning how to communicate. So, Alan, your thoughts on communication. You're a good communicator, Alan. I know you care about your people. And you're always very respectful. But what's your thoughts, questions?
Oh, yeah, I always try my best. But there are a lot of personalities. And I think when you work over Zoom and systems like Slack and Microsoft Teams, the true voice of your question or of the communication is lacking. And so people get easily frustrated. I've had a number of calls with employees where they misunderstood something or they didn't understand the tone of how somebody was asking or talking to them. So that's a common thing that happens. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are around that. I mean, there's clearly going digital is not the easiest thing, especially when it comes to someone's expectation of doing a good job or not, or how they're collaborating.
Yeah, it's interesting because my sort of origin story for why I launched Brilliant People in the first place was that I used to have a manager who, in essence, I was a remote employee years ago, and a manager was in Colorado and the company I worked for was in California. So all of my conversations with this manager were over the phone. I had worked for her for 5 years and she was the kind of person that really good at her job. And I had a lot of respect for her at her level, but she would say things like, yeah, you're just never going to get that. You're not wired that way. And I'm a really hard charging worker. And so after 5 years of having someone talk to me like that, it just crushed me. And so I think that's where that whole communication piece becomes so important, is people don't understand how the other side is perceiving them. So I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to get fired for 5 years. I kept thinking I'm going to get fired. And I finally realized, like, how do I bring a different person to the table that connects with her on the level she needs, not in the way I'm used to showing up? And when I started digging into personalities, that was the impetus for me. I started digging into personalities. I realized how she needed me to show up, how she needed me to talk to her, and based on her personality style. And it completely transformed our relationship over the next 2 years. So I think communication is huge. And I think that's something that most of us, again, if I could use myself, and I throw myself on the fire all the time, because I can come across so forcefully sometimes, I really try to be careful of watching. I like to watch body language and see people's facial expressions to know if I've said something that didn't come across right. Well, that's really hard to do when you're on Zoom.
Yeah, but there are clues that you can pick up. While they may be more subtle and more intentionality has to go into that, there are clues you can pick up, certainly. And even in texting, I mean, text is really good for getting quick responses, a quick word out to someone, but text messaging can be just such a challenge. And it comes back to communication is really knowing your audience. And you and I talked a lot about, again, about the four personality types and all that. I want to just touch on this because I read you as a very outgoing, extroverted person. And how is it that someone can project themselves as one way, we can pick it up, and therefore we may get a communication style going when it actually may not be the most effective with that individual?
Yeah, that's a hard one. And not that I'm the only person out there like this. So I have been told, for those of you that weren't in that conversation, I've been told I'm an introvert with social skills. And I can walk into a meeting or a party or whatever and be perfectly at home if I've set the intention. I'm here for this reason, meet some people. Most people that meet me just think, wow, you're really outgoing and you got a lot to say. I got a lot of words. My family is a very big, loud, loving family. And so I think it's a learned behavior. But in order to, what do you call it, rejuvenate, in order to get energy back, I to be by myself and be in silence. And so when I go out and facilitate for an organization, as an example, I'm so excited to be there. I'm so excited to meet people. I'm excited to see the aha moments that they have when we're in this discussion, but it is exhausting. So when I leave and I go home, like sometimes on the drive home, I can barely keep my eyes open because it's so exhausting for me. You might not be able to peg somebody for who they are in the way that they're showing up. I mean, I feel like where that's concerned, like I'm showing up in a happy and excited way because I'm genuinely interested in the conversation we're having. And it's okay for you to show up that way as well because you're mirroring how I'm showing up. And I think that's the main thing, that you really pay attention to the audience in the moment that you're with them.
I think you hit on something that is such a good point and really gets into emotional intelligence, is when someone is exhausted after what you thought was they just crush it watching you perform, you would think, man, this is must be giving you life. And it's not the case. And I think that is such an important thing to make sure people get in the proper roles. It's not to say like yourself, you've overcome the introverted side of you to project because you're so passionate about what you do. So there's motivation there to cause someone to overcome that for the cause that they believe in and really speak out about. Be interesting to know if Martin Luther King, seeing as this is Martin Luther King Day, if he was an introvert or an extrovert. He certainly was a good communicator, especially when it came to that. But I suspect he might have been more of an introvert, but he has passion for his cause, civil rights, which was such an important one, is what drove him out there and put him out there in front. So it's just really interesting. But how does emotional intelligence play into all of this?
Well, I think it's a really good question. Basically, in any given situation, there are going to be emotional and interpersonal needs that we have to be able to respond to accordingly. And where I might be able to show up in a certain way on a given day, I'm having a great day, whatever it is. But the next day, maybe something really heavy is going on and I'm showing up in a way lower energy. I'm hopeful that the people that I'm connecting with, the people that I'm working with day to day are going to be able to read that. And that's not always going to be the case. We just are training sometimes about the fact that we're not mind readers. Mm-hmm. And so you can't expect that somebody's going to be able to recognize where your facial expressions for that given day. But I think that the idea is we have to learn how to sort of stretch across the map. If
right.
you think about the four basic personalities, you have to be able to stretch across the map into the other personality's comfort zone, if you will. And that's where you get mm-hmm. drained, because it's more of a stretch. But for us to be able to have these great relationships and be able to connect with all types, we have to learn how to do that. We have to figure out what it is for those other personalities that they need in a given situation. And so when we're working with them, we're able to stretch into that other area.
Yeah. I got a question in from one of our listeners that just popped in, which is really good. It happens to be a client of mine, and I'm always talking with them. We were just talking about the book, Good to Great, where James Collins says, get the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and get the right people in the right seats, which goes to the point of this. If you're asking someone to do something that causes them to go home at the end of the day exhausted, are they in the
yeah.
right place? And should we encourage that, or should we refocus them? And then I want to get your response, and then I want to get, let's get around to Alice, Jack, and Alan to get their thoughts on it, because this is one of the key things, is getting the right people on the bus in the right seat. There's some people who go, no, I know this is difficult for me, but I'm so passionate, I want to do it. Your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. Patrick Lencioni, who wrote The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, has a lot of work that he's done around the geniuses, like our working right. genius. And I think that that's a really key point to consider, is this thing that I'm having to do, is it draining me or is it giving me energy? And I think that all of us have areas of our work that are going to drain us. And we don't necessarily have the ability to just say, hey, I'm not going to do that thing.
Yeah, exactly right. It's just a part of the job. Yep.
Right. But to your point of when you're a manager or when you're the owner and you're trying to figure out, is that the right person for this job? It's definitely something to consider, is what's their zone of genius and are they the right person? So it's a consideration that needs to be had. If you're a small company, you may not have the luxury of pulling somebody off a job that isn't their genius. But if you pay attention to that, you can start guiding them in the direction where they're really going to get a lot more joy out of the work that they're doing. And you're going to yeah. get a lot more from that.
Get a lot more desired result. Alice, when you're training people, do you see square pegs going into a round hole? I mean, someone that's in a job and it just sucks the life out of them. What's your thoughts on this important topic?
Yeah, we do a lot up front to make sure we don't have that happen. So we rely very heavily on the DISC assessment mm-hmm. and a really thorough interview process. But anything can happen once somebody comes on board and maybe the job evolves into something that they weren't really cut out for. So what we do is we spend a lot of time talking to that person and looking at their motivators, looking at their skills, and really trying to see if there is another fit for that person. But asking a lot of really hard questions, because you have to get to the bottom of, is that do they still really want to work there and can they be successful? I don't want to just move somebody out and move them to another role to have them still not be successful. So is that success something that can be, even be found in the mm-hmm. mortgage space? Because we are unique. We're always changing. Mm-hmm. Things can happen at any time. And so for someone who likes a lot of stability, it may be coaching them into, maybe they're just not even in the right career.
Yeah, we are unique. It's a unique industry. Jack, your thoughts.
David, I think Alice touched on it, but I'll expand. Before you can make that assessment, you have to know the people, right? When I managed people, I did what I call waltzing Matilda every day. And what that means to me is that for an hour a day, and I know we're all busy, but we're never too busy to connect with our team and get to know them and what motivates them, right? But I would walk my floors an hour every day, and I would talk to the people. I would ask them how it's going. Are we doing this right? Can we do it better? And I'll tell you, David, when you go to the airport, and you get on an airplane, would you get on an airplane and you didn't know where it was going? Of course not, David. I mean, you're leaving Austin and you're headed to Phoenix, right? But no one gets on an airplane and it's leaving Austin and you don't know where it's going,
right? So you as a leader in an organization have to communicate the vision, the strategy. What are we doing? Why is it important? What it's going to take for us to be successful as a team, and what that means to everybody on the team that we achieve our success. And so get up out of your chair. Go get to know your staff. Know them as personal as they feel comfortable letting them. And it helps you understand what is their strengths, what is their weaknesses, and helping them find the best seat for them on the bus.
Whitney, what's your thoughts on that? We got to wrap this up here in just a minute.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that because, again, it goes back to that sense of belonging and they feel like they matter, right? They're not just a cog in the machine.
Right.
So absolutely.
Jack, you did this when you were in a virtual world for a lot of, but how's that successfully done? Your examples that you've seen, Whitney, were this being done in a virtual world where you're getting around, instead of walking the floor, are you getting on a lot of phone calls?
Yeah, you have to get on the phone or get on the Zoom and just make the effort to show people that you actually care. I think that we've gotten to such a place with a lot of these Zoom calls, even when companies are having meetings, people's videos are off.
Yeah, that's one requirement that one of our clients, they went in and said, hey, your camera will be on or you will not be on this call. And I think that, you know, unless there's an extenuating circumstance, you got a black eye or some physical issue going on. So let's get over to Alan as we wrap this up. Alan?
Yeah, the only thing I would really say is just it's difficult to manage people when you're not in person with this new digital world. So like you said earlier, understanding what someone maybe needs from you is really important and trying to sit back and think about that. The same type of tone and message doesn't apply to everybody, which is really unique and difficult to do.
Yep. So true. If you want to get to know Whitney better, you can go onto our website, Lickin' on Lending. Or how would you recommend, Whitney, for people to connect with you?
They can go to our website at mybrilliantpeople.com.
Mybrilliantpeople.com. Good. Also, we're going to have you on our website because we're partnering together. I'm really excited about this. This is one of those topics that I have such a passion for. Marcus Lemonis says, and The Prophet, which is one of my favorite CNBC shows, is he says it's people, process, and product. People being the most important one and also the most challenging. So if you're listening to this, folks, and you're getting something out of this, listeners, please get a hold of Whitney and at least have a conversation with her. She'll give you some great tools. You'll not be disappointed. Alice, Alan, Jack, thanks so much for joining us on the interview today and appreciate it very much. And Whitney, so great to have you as a guest. Look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much.
Folks, that wraps up this Hot Topic segment, and we're so grateful to have you as our listeners. Next week, we're going to have Kathleen of Simple Nexus. She's the new CEO, doing a great job. If you've been following Simple Nexus, it's really interesting to hear how, I mean, they acquired LBA, and then Simple Nexus got acquired, like almost like the week after. It's just so much going on in the M&A space. So I'm looking forward to having Kathleen on. I'm really wanting to focus in on her leadership. And when I sat at a Simple Nexus open house and got a chance to meet her, David Boland introduced us, and we started talking about, I was so impressed as I was waiting my turn to go talk to her, how many of her ex-employees that she used to work at came up and talked to her and say, how much we miss your leadership. So you're going to want to tune in next week, as we're going to be talking to Kathleen. She does a great job. We're going to be hearing a lot more from Simple Nexus. We're getting them as a sponsor. So very excited about that. Say a special thank you to our current sponsors, Finastra, Lenders One, Incelerate, Mobility, MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, Mortgage Collaborative, SnapDoc Success Kit, and Lender Toolkit. Appreciate it, folks, being here. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.